about fugitive. QM Production. Starring David Jansen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken, back with you on KSAV. Tonight we're going to be discussing a man with three faces and one arm. This sounds kind of interesting. The three faces of the one-armed man. I spent a long time trying to figure out when people referred to OAM, what they were talking about, but I'm more sophisticated now. If you want to join in, 800-407-KSAV, or during the program, talk at ksav.org. But we don't need to listen to me jabber. We'll listen to the man himself jabber, Bobby Neer.
Thank you, Dave. Considering how central he is to the basic premise of The Fugitive, the one-armed man, whether his name is Fred Johnson or Frederick Sykes or Ben Charnquist, seems almost like an afterthought when he first appears in the original series. I needed to go back and watch the start of all of the season one episodes of the 60s version of the series to make sure I was remembering correctly, and it turns out that I was. The one-armed man does not make any appearance at all on screen until episode number 14, the flashback scene in Little Egypt, and he doesn't appear in real time until we see him in a phone booth in episode 19, Search in the Windy City, and he does not become a permanent part of the weekly introduction until the first episode of the second season, and that's number 31 overall. Considering the impact he would have, that is quite surprising. The first one-armed man, of course, is played by Bill Raisch, whose real name was Carl William Raisch, and he is our topic in this first half of tonight's program. As most people know, Raisch was hired for his appearance and his real missing arm, and not for his acting ability. In fact, he was more or less a stuntman, but a fairly famous one. He was the one-time stand-in for Burt Lancaster, and later he had an actual scene in a famous film opposite no less than Kirk Douglas. He had a bit part in Spartacus as a Roman soldier who gets his right arm, that was replaced at that time by a prosthetic arm for the movie, chopped off by Douglas during a battle scene. But they cut it from the original print because they felt it was too gory. But both arms are not. He was no actor, and he knew it. In fact, he was once a professional dancer in the Ziegfeld Follies with his wife back in the late 1920s. And given the appearance we remember, that is hard to imagine. Had he been born much later, today he might appear on Dancing with the Stars. But back in the 60s, his looks got him this job, as did his missing arm, which he lost while he was helping to fight a fire on board a ship during World War II. Ballroom dancer turned war hero turned movie stuntman and extra turned mad, vicious killer of a woman named Helen Kimball, Bill Raisch would become one of the best known and most hated characters in the history of TV. Ken, either the producers of The Fugitive were absolutely brilliant in hiring an unknown and rather untalented person, at least acting-wise, to play a pivotal role in their new TV series, or it was just plain dumb luck. What do you think? Had you been in charge, would you have hired him just because he looked the part?
Absolutely. He looks like a menace. He's not really handsome at all. I'm looking at the screen capture right now. And sorry to say it, Bill, but you're kind of ugly. If they had hired a handsome guy, it wouldn't have worked. So obviously the producers or the casting people, whatever, they did a brilliant job, and I'll give them props. You know, actually, these three characters in the Fugitive series, David Jansen as Kimball, you know, Barry Morris as Gerard, and Bill Raisch as the one-armed man, this was perfect casting. I mean, 100% on the mark, because these three characters make this entire series. And I like the way you pointed out that, you know, from the girl from Little Egypt, that's the first time
right.
I saw the one-armed man, because if I'm not mistaken, I think the other times they showed him in the credits, it was a still photograph.
But that was still season two.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
That's right. They don't. He doesn't appear at all in the first season. You know, not in the intro or anywhere. That's what they, like Kitty says, that's the second season.
So in the second season, they do the still photograph. So So actually, we're not introduced to him.
That's right.
Until the flashback scene in The Girl from Little Egypt.
That's
and you know what? That is the most memorable scene in that episode, is that, you know, it's kind of an eerie night, kind of dark, and we see a figure running from Kimball's house. He's kind of staggering, and then he pulls up to the car, and he has that look. And, I mean, the first time you see it, it just hits you. You know, I was taken back.
Well, it's brilliantly filmed, and it's brilliant. The lighting is what really does it. I mean, his face right in front of the car window, lit that way, certainly has the main impact. And you're right, he did have that certain kind of grungy, dirty, man of the street look about him that actually was perfect for this story. So it's kind of a risk, though. I think that they took a considerable risk in hiring a man who did not have any real acting ability. Now, I don't know how many scripts they had in the can, or whether or not they knew that there wasn't going to be a whole lot of acting required by the one-armed man for a while at least. And so maybe it wasn't as big a risk as I think it is. But, you know, if I had been running the series and this guy tried out for the part, I might look at it and go, what are we going to do if we ever face the time when he has dialogue?
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that worked out very well in his favor. Don't you agree that he had that kind of flat, monotone way of talking that you would expect from a man like that, didn't he?
Yeah, he doesn't say much in the two appearances in the first season, right?
Right.
The only time we hear him talk, if I'm not mistaken, I have to go back over and see when is the actual time he opens his mouth and says something. But I believe it's in episode 39, Escape into Black, when he's on the phone. And he has that one-liner.
Right, right.
Well, wait, don't we hear him talk in Search in a Windy City because we see him making a phone call there?
I can't remember if he said
Kenny may be right about that. He's in the phone booth in Search in the Windy City. And that's when he turns around slowly and we see that he really has the one arm. So from my perspective as a viewer, I'm saying, I'll be damned, this is true. Kimball's not lying. There really is a one arm man.
Yeah.
And I can't really remember. Kenny, do you remember whether he really says anything there?
Well, I thought he had made a phone call and he asked to speak to somebody.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
And they said that he wasn't there right now, so he said he'd call back.
And that's about it?
I think that's the extent of his lines in that episode.
Yeah. He does not have a lot of dialogue at all until the series finale.
Yeah.
You know, in the Judgment, he has a scene where he's talking to, he has a confrontation with Gerard, and he's talking to that lawyer, and he's got a lot of dialogue. But by that time, he's done...
He's had a little more dialogue in the fourth season, though, when we've seen
him. Yeah, because they're desperate, and they keep bringing him back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they don't have anything to do.
But how about that line in Escape into Black? That is a classic line, and that was very revealing. He's on the phone, and he wants to turn Kimball into the cop.
Oh, yes.
And he says, get me homicide. And then it goes to commercial break.
Oh, I love that line.
That one line was so revealing. You know,
oh, yeah.
Why is he turning Kimball in? Something must have happened.
Yeah, that's a great moment, and it's because it's something you don't really expect. Kitty, what about the look? Would a guy like this running in front of your car scare you?
Probably. I mean, just mainly to start with, you're not expecting to see a person like that all of a sudden be in front of your car. And in all fairness to Bill, I have no doubt he was probably a little better looking when he was in the Ziegfeld Follies. He was younger.
I've seen a picture of him with his wife. Yes, he looks much different.
I'm sure he cleaned up quite nicely when he wanted to.
Oh, yeah, I've seen a picture of him with his wife, and you never know he's the same man. Absolutely. And so they made him look that way, but it's highly effective. But I think that in this case, this is... You know, I try to think back to other TV series in which the appearance, in which it's hard to imagine anybody else in that role. You know what I'm saying? Now, when we get to this later on in this show, we're going to talk about other people who have done this part. But other people who didn't really look the part, and I thought about people like
Leonard Nimoy in Star Trek. You know, can you imagine anybody else really with those pointy ears? It almost seemed to fit him. Or Don Knotts in the Andy Griffith Show. You know, as skinny and as frail and as nervous as he always was. Those are real actors who not only could act the part, but they look the part so much that it's almost hard to imagine anybody else like that. Now, in the first series, I mean, who knew that there was going to be a movie, and who knew that there would one day come back as a series? So, for me, I mean, this is the guy. There really, literally is nobody else. And it's just, by the way, according to the Internet Movie Database, where I got most of my information about him, as you might expect, after The Fugitive ended, he was so typecast he couldn't get any work at all.
Yeah.
He got no work at all, and Quinn Martin put him on a retainer just so he would have some income, even though he didn't use them for anything else. Excuse me. So, I mean, his career was ruined. Now, of course, he was born in 1905, so, you know, I mean, he was 58 years old when the series ended. So he was approaching retirement in a few years, so it wasn't as bad as it might have been, but people hated him so much. As a matter of fact, some time ago, this was back, oh, gosh, I think in the late 90s or around 2000, somebody I knew and I don't know anymore had sent me a report done on a California TV station about one of those Where Are They Now things. Ken, have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Oh, you have seen it?
Yeah.
You actually have it on tape or anything?
Not now, but oh, I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, I used
Where
to have it.
Now? Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, he's asked in that how it was, and he told the story about how people hated him.
Yeah.
And people out in the street used to holler at him, being the one-armed man.
You know, the producers did a good job of making him look like a villain.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can't remember. I've been thinking about him, you know, most of the day because we were going to be on the radio tonight. Did he ever smile in the entire series? I think he had a grin and he had the look, you know, in the screen captures here, you know.
Yeah.
When he looked out the bus, he has that look.
Well, what is that episode later on? Kitty, what is it? Clean and Quiet Town?
Yeah,
is that the one where he's all dressed?
I think he smiled in that one when those guys beat up Kimball for him.
Right.
Really?
Other
than that, I don't remember him smiling ever.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what reason does he have to? He's got Kimball chasing him all over the place.
What they should have done also is he should have been unshaven. You know, a couple of times he was very clean shaven. I think if you have him more grubby, more menacing.
You think he had to be grubbier than he was? I thought he was grubby enough.
Well, he looked clean shaven a couple of times, and I thought that was a mistake. You know,
but you know what's really missing about the one-armed man in the first series? We never find out anything about his past, you know?
Yeah.
We never really find out whether he's committed crimes before. Why was he robbing the house that night? Was he into drugs? Was he an alcoholic?
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of stories there not told, don't you think?
I have a question for both of you. What do you think if Roy Huggins had had this character, just a regular person, you know, he had both arms, do you think the effect of him being, you know, the guy that Kimball's after over the 4 years would have been the same, or do you think the one-arm aspect really enhanced everything?
Well, I think the one-arm
no,
thing
because,
is a gimmick. Go ahead, Kitty.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say no, because initially Roy Huggins, in his original concept of it, was that Kimball said he was going to say that he saw a red-haired, bushy, bearded-faced guy, but he realized, you know, that could be, you know, at least 2 million guys across the country.
Exactly.
And so he wanted it to be somebody that was more distinct looking.
That's right. So it's actually a visual effect. It's more for the purposes of the story,
yeah,
the series, so that he can, and think of the things that would have been missing. I mean, the effect wouldn't be the same when he saw him on the bus
All right. I think what would have been improvement is if they could have gotten the tattooed woman from the Ziegfeld Follies to come on and maybe have a peg leg and some could have been a little more identifiable.
Does Michelle Follies really have a tattooed woman only you?
We're going to come back a time out, and then we'll come back to discuss, you know, a face or two more of the one-armed man when we continue to talk Fugitive on Retro Radio.
Hear the music you love from the past, or the memories that cherish will last. This will be your me, it's the place you wanna be, it's KXAE. Never far away from work or at play, hear the sounds that you love every day. We play the sounds of today and yesterday, so stay with KXAE. Whether on the go or in your home, hear the sounds of yesterday. KXAE will be with you to warm the day in every way, so share the music of KXAE. Listen to us, we know you'll agree. It's the place you want to be, for songs that fill the day, it's KXAE. Stay with KXAE.
We are back talking Fugitive, and speaking of that, in a little over an hour tonight on KSAB, talking television with Dave White, will be our tribute to the late Barry Morse, and I hope everybody will tune in and listen and hopefully participate in that. But now we're back talking about the one-armed man, talking Fugitive, so let's go back to Bobby Neer.
Okay, Dave. Season 1, episode number 29 of The Fugitive, found Richard Kimball up against one of his biggest adversaries. No, not Girard. No, not the howling winds outside from a hurricane, but an even bigger windbag inside named Marcy King. Now in season 3, Kimball is back again in another windstorm, but since Marcy King is gone, this hurricane seems not nearly as bad. Although Girard does catch up to and capture Kimball, and it looks for a while like this is the end. Except that Kimball is supported by a migrant farm family, and especially by a young and pretty new love interest named Kate, who just might be willing to go further than most previous characters have been in helping Kimball to escape. She might even be willing to kill for him. Ill Wind Part 1, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. As terrific as Bill Reich was in the first Fugitive, he wasn't able to come back and reprise the part in the movie version and the 2000 series because he was born in 1905 and he had passed away by then. There is, of course, a movie version, but for our purposes now, we will skip the movie One Armed Man until the end of this program, if we have time, since he is hardly the focal point of that story. In fact, that's one of the problems I have with it, but we'll tackle all of that when we do a two-part show on the movie later this year. In 2000, The One-Armed Man has not only a new actor in Stephen Lang, but a new name in Ben Charnquist. How different is this? Well, Stephen Lang was and is a real actor. I knew him first in the late 80s in one of my favorite series, Crime Story. He also has been in many plays and TV series and films, and on Broadway, where he originated the part of Colonel Jessup that Jack Nicholson would later memorably play in the film A Few Good Men. Plus, he's been in several feature films, including Gettysburg and Gods and Generals, and he has won many acting awards. In The Fugitive, he's nothing like Fred Johnson, for one thing. His killing of Helen is not the result of a random robbery. For another, he doesn't just run around the country proclaiming his innocence and trying not to be noticed. In fact, he does something the first one-armed man does not do until the series finale. He kills again, not just once, but twice. He also has a larcenous wife in one of the episodes, and if anything, he's even more vicious and dangerous than the original. Kitty, this is strikingly different to me, and I would have expected, given the purist that I am about this series, that I would not like this. But in reality, I loved it. It brought a whole new dimension to this series and to the one-armed man, to say nothing of actually watching a real actor act. Things could not possibly have looked or sounded more different. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I kind of find Bill Reich's one-armed man at times kind of annoying, you know, just because he's kind of a dimwit to a certain degree, well, you know, with some of the things he's done. But in the case of Ben Charnquist, and I loved the name Ben Charnquist because it just sounds so much more menacing. And, you know, although, interestingly enough, Fred Johnson is one of his aliases. You know, Kimball found a whole bunch of passports.
All right. I forgot about that. You're
yes,
right.
Yes, Fred Johnson is an alias of his. So they did kind of keep that theme a little bit. But this guy truly is the guy you loved to hate. I mean, there was nothing redeemable about this guy. And, you know, I know that in the original series, you know, we've discussed it where the one-armed man in that instance could have made a compelling case of self-defense when he killed Helen. But in the 2000 version, I mean, he just basically committed cold-blooded murder with Helen because he got mad at her because she wouldn't walk out the door with him because it was a botched kidnapping attempt. Because she was the daughter of a very wealthy man. But, yeah, you know, he was, I found him fascinating to watch. And as I said, he was the guy I just loved to hate. And when we got to the end of that one season, when Kimball found him and just started beating him to a pulp and took him hostage, you know, I was just ready to jump up and go, yeah, you show him, Kimball.
Ken?
Yeah, he's very menacing, and he's got that dirty look. You wouldn't want to be down a dark alley and have him behind you. And I'm looking at the screen capture now. I think it's key. You can't have these guys be handsome looking, even though he probably is, Stephen Lang.
Oh, yeah, he's very handsome looking in the movie Gods and Generals.
Yeah. But you can't have these guys smile. You can't have them tell a joke. You know, it's very, very crucial when you have a villain. He has to be the part. He has to say whatever comes out of his mouth.
But, you know, actually, the Stephen Lang one-armed man, he did kind of make jokes, you know, and he would smile. But it was very menacing. I mean, it was always like, you know, I'm making a joke here, but, you know, if you don't do what I tell you to do, I'm going to take out a gun and blow your head off, or I'll take out my knife and cut your throat. It was that type of thing. I mean, he was just menacing, I think, on every single level.
But again, the recommendation I would have is these guys got to be unshaven. It's not that they have a beard, but they had that stubby face.
And actually, I believe Stephen Lang did have that a lot. I remember seeing that on him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes the part more.
He's an outstanding actor, and that's why it's different. But I got to tell you, I can't choose between the two and say that one is better than the other because they're so different. And I think that the producers are looking for two different things in these series. They're looking simply for a look and a way to scare the audience in the first series. And in the second series, they want to get deeper into that, and they want to make him more a part of the story. And why not? They had a real actor on their hands, so it would have been criminal to only use somebody like Stephen Lang just to be in a couple of episodes and simply look around. I mean, he's much deeper. But the main thing is, he kills again, and that's something we don't see the one-armed man in the original series do until the finale. We don't see that. And so I think there's always a little bit of doubt, and maybe infinitesimal, just a tiny, tiny little bit of doubt. Is Kimball right? Did he really kill his wife? Because we don't see him kill anybody else. In the second series, we see him kill other people.
Well, yeah, and from my perspective, too, you know, you see him kill Helen, but then you also see him kill Buddy LaRue, insurance investigator, and then Nicholas Armanesco.
Right.
And just with the brutality of it, you just really get the impression that Helen was not the first person he killed, and Nicholas Armanesco was probably not going to be the last person he killed.
And you know, I really like, or certain episodes I really like, what was the episode, Kitty, where he had a wife? Was that New Orleans Saints?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Absolutely.
He actually had a wife in that one.
Yeah.
She was as bad as he was.
Yeah. She was very... She was very awful.
Did she have a beard too? No, she didn't have a beard.
They got inspiration on that episode from the one where we found out that Fred Johnson had a girlfriend in the original series.
Exactly, right.
But obviously, you know, the girlfriend in the original series was actually kind of a nice lady, whereas this woman, I mean, she was, you know, she was just real bad.
Right. So there were a lot of good episodes, and it's just a pity that the series didn't live long enough for him to have developed, because I think it would have been very interesting. I think what they were going to do was they were going to develop the Wonder Man over a period of 2 or 3 or 4 years in ways that we could not have imagined, but it didn't happen. Now, while we have a few minutes, let's just mention in passing that there's a third Wonder Man. Of course, he's the one in the movie version. And his name is Frederick Sykes, and I asked both of you, this couldn't possibly be more different. This guy is really well-dressed every time we see him, isn't he?
He's got a tie on.
Well, yeah, and also I believe he is a former cop. That was
something that was
brought up, was that he used to be a police officer,
and now
apparently he became a hitman for hire when he no longer was able to be a cop, because that's basically what he was in that movie.
What do you think, Ken? I mean, is there something lost here by having him so well-dressed?
Yes, and, you know, I'm looking at his hair, you know, neatly combed.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't scare me if you saw him on the street. you know, the main thing with a villain, don't you hate it that sometimes there's a very bad, evil guy, and yet sometimes the audience will root for this guy because they like him.
Right.
You know, I'll give you an example. Star Trek, The Wrath of Khan.
Right.
He was evil, but I kind of liked him, you know, the way he was against Captain Kirk. But in the, you know, the original Fugitive series, you know, I never liked Fred Johnson, you know.
Do you prefer it more when it's just pure hatred all the way down the line?
I never rooted for him. And then Stephen Lang, you know, I don't like that guy either.
Well, I never rooted for the Stephen Lang character, but I found him just fascinating to watch.
Well, there's more dimensions to his personality, and he's smarter. I mean, the way the original Wonder Man is portrayed, he's just an idiot. He's just a moron. He doesn't, I mean, what does he know from anything? I think you even pointed out to me privately, what was the episode where you took him to task for not saying something? Was that a Clean and Quiet Town? For not telling them that?
When he drags Fred Johnson into the police station, you'd think he would have been screaming at the cops, "Help me, this guy is nuts. I don't know who he is. He's claiming that I killed his wife. I don't know." It's like, he doesn't say anything. He just stands there and looks guilty.
Right.
And in the second series, when Kimball did succeed in taking Charnquist hostage, and he called up Gerard in Chicago, and he said,
One minute.
And he said, "There's somebody I want you to talk to." The first words out of Charnquist's mouth were, "You got to help me. This guy's crazy."
Right. Well, I think that in summation, I would just say that I agree with Ken. I think if you're going to have a villain, have a real one, and have somebody that everybody can really, truly hate. And in the first series and the second, the movie version is too generic for me. I mean, I don't have any particular feelings about him one way or the other. I mean, sure, he kills Helen Kimball, but, I mean, it's those other two that are really especially memorable. They're the men you really, really love to hate and the ones you remember. I can't think about The Fugitive at all, the original one, without seeing that image of the one-armed man in the car window. It's virtually impossible, and it takes some real work to cement that image on viewers' memories, but I think that's what makes the difference. They're all different, but personally, I would probably tend to go with the first one. I know, Kitty, that you would probably go with the third. What about you, Ken? Which one?
The first one, yeah. You know, he had an arm missing, too.
That's right, and he didn't shave. That's the key. You know, I'm sitting here, I have that villain look, Ken. If you saw me, you'd probably really hate me.
I'm scared just listening to you.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't
all
your
right.
Voice is getting...
We're going to be back in 2 weeks on May the 20th for An Ill Wind Part 1, if memory serves me correct. Hope you'll join us at that time. Talking Fugitive here on Sherrovision Radio. Hey,